So Hebrews chapter 12, starting at verse 1. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God.
Good morning, everyone. It's been an amazing journey through the book of Hebrews, hasn't it? If you've been coming regularly and you've been looking at this chapter by chapter and bit by bit, there's just so much in it, so much to say. So those of you who are thinking, oh, a two-verse reading, perhaps I'll get home a bit early for some lunch today. Hate to disappoint you, but no, I shall do my very best not to just go on and on. But it is true that there is just so much revelation. There is just so much of Jesus in every verse of this book. And there's a PowerPoint that hopefully you can find on there, Hebrews 12, thank you. And our thought from these verses this morning is this: fix your eyes on Jesus. Which is a little bit like the vision that Vicky was just sharing with us in many ways, isn't it? Fix your eyes on Jesus. And then I've given it a bit of a subtitle this morning, which is get in shape, get moving, and don't stop. Which sounds like it maybe should go with a New Year's resolution kind of message, doesn't it? You know, that kind of get down to the gym, sign up for your membership, you know, have some thoughts about how you're going to really get in shape, get fit physically. Well, it's that kind of imagery that we've got before us this morning in these verses. It's the imagery of the Christian life, the walk of faith, following Jesus, being like a race that we run. Being like something you have to put energy into that's got a thrust and a purpose and a goal and something to achieve and something to go for and something to run for. This is the imagery that is behind these couple of verses in Hebrews chapter 12. It's really the imagery of the Olympic Games, isn't it? Did you notice? Because we've just had chapter 11 of Hebrews. And we've been going through all of those heroes of the faith, haven't we? Mentioning all kinds of Old Testament people who lived amazing lives of faith. So amazing, actually, that the writer to the Hebrews says that God was proud of them. He gave a good testimony about them. He thought that their lives were brilliant and worth something, accomplished something. All these amazing great heroes of the past, like Moses and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the great heroes of the Jewish faith. Were being talked about in chapter 11. And then chapter 12 begins. Because we've got this great cloud of witnesses, as it puts it. And immediately you get this idea, let us run the race set before us. You get this idea of a racetrack in the middle of a great arena, don't you? A great stadium, surrounded by all kinds of people who are looking on. And in that crowd, you've got not only perhaps ordinary spectators, but you've got the great heroes, the athletes who've run before, the people who won gold last year, or the people who retired a couple of years ago, the great famous names of the past in athletics. And they're all sitting in those stands, and they're watching as you are about to take up your life with Jesus and run with it and do that race course. And he's saying, look around you. Think about all those guys from the past. We've got such a great cloud, or crowd, if you like, of witnesses surrounding us, of people who have testified to Jesus their whole life through, who've had their faith fixed firmly in God, those who came before Jesus' time. They've had their faith fixed firmly on God, and they didn't let go of it right to the very end. We've got all of these people, and they're not just waiting there as spectators on your race. Sometimes we think about these verses as though it's all those kind of great heroes of the faith are up in heaven looking down on us and watching us as we live out our lives. Well, there may be some kind of truth in that, but that's not really the import of the verse. What the verses are trying to say to us is, this great crowd of witnesses, you know what? We've just learned in chapter 11, they died in faith without receiving the promises, without getting hold of the fullness of the things they were hoping in God for. They were looking for an amazing kingdom, weren't they? That was going to come, a beautiful kingdom, a spiritual kingdom, a heavenly kingdom that was going to invade the kingdoms of earth, not with violence and bloodshed and putting people down and aggression, not that kind of kingdom, but a kingdom that comes with love and with sacrifice and with beauty and with truth and with kindness and with hope and with reconciliation and with forgiveness, the kind of kingdom that can right all the wrongs of the earth. And those heroes of the faith, they were running with that vision of that kingdom in mind, and they didn't yet receive it. So they're in the stands, not as people with gold medals hanging round their necks. Yay, we've already received our prize. They're still waiting, Hebrews tells us, because apart from us, they would not be made perfect. They would not receive the fullness of that prize. They're waiting on us, on you and me, as we run out the race of our lives. They're looking on, not just to see if we do well or not. They're looking on because they're saying, come on, guys, run a good race, because we are waiting to receive that beautiful kingdom. We're still waiting. It's been years and years and years and years. It's been millennia. It goes back in history to the very beginning of humanity on this earth. We've been waiting to see this kingdom come in, and we haven't seen it yet. When is that generation going to arise that is going to see the fullness of that promise coming in? That's what those witnesses are looking for. And you get the picture in Hebrews of this huge stadium full of people. People who've run a race of faith and who are still waiting. Come on, which generation is it going to be? Who's it going to be who's going to run and see Jesus coming again and bringing in the fullness of that beautiful kingdom? So we've got an arena, and we've got crowds of cheering us on, witnesses, and we've got a race that is marked out for us, and a contest, perhaps it could be. That word is the same word, a race or a contest, some kind of competition and energy and effort that's going to have to be exerted by us. We've got a focus and a goal, an end point, the finishing tape, if you like, and we're going to have to do some training and get in shape and get ready to run it. It's that sort of imagery that we've got before us in these verses this morning. I don't know if you've ever sat in the Olympic Stadium. Did any of you have tickets to the Olympics when it was in London? Did some of you see? Yeah, some of you saw it. I imagine, I didn't go, but I imagine that there was an amazing, electrifying kind of atmosphere to be there. Is that true? Did you basically say that? You don't have to say yes, I'm genuinely interested, but that's what I imagine. Or perhaps a bit closer to home for me, how many of you have ever kind of stood on the side of the road when the marathon runs past and you've actually been there in the crowd for the marathon? How many of you done that one? Yeah? It's the same kind of thing, probably on a smaller scale, but there's an amazing atmosphere, isn't there, in those events, sitting in those huge stadiums or standing at the side of the road. I've done that one quite a lot, standing at the side of the road of the marathon, because where I used to be working with the congregation in Greenwich at New Life, we are on the marathon route, which means Marathon Sunday every year is a bit of a write-off for a church service, because all the roads are closed and you can't really get there, and you have to get up really, really early in the morning and kind of walk across the roads and jump over the barriers that have all been cordoned off and to get into the building at all. So every year we used to have a kind of service outside in the garden outside, and we would be a water point and a toilet stop for runners. I mean, we're only kind of 6 miles in, so people aren't desperate at that point, but people in the crowd are glad that we're a toilet stop, and we give out teas and coffees, and we just chat to people, and then we just enjoy the marathon really and stand on the side of the road and watch the runners go by. But the atmosphere, I'm always struck every year I did it, I was struck by the energy and the excitement and the kind of the buzz of watching these people running for something. And they're running for causes, aren't they? They're running for charities, they're raising money, they've done loads of training, they've worked really hard, and there's something just brilliant about the celebration of that race and that energy and that life. And you know, for us in the Christian life, we should be living all the time with that same sense of energy and atmosphere and purpose in the race that we run with Jesus. It should be like that every day. Like that Olympic stadium, charged atmosphere, the excitement of knowing there's a race to be run, there's a prize to be won, there's an aim and a goal, and it's a wonderful one. It's a beautiful one that we're going for. You know, some of us stumble around in our Christian lives. We stumble around in the walk of faith. We're not really sure where we're going, and we're not really sure what we're meant to be doing with Jesus. And we get all distracted and confused, and we think it's all about trying to be a good person, or trying to sort of make my life look sorted, or I don't know what we think it is, but it's aimless and it's wandering and it's stumbling. And we've lost that sense of the atmosphere of purpose that every Christian is meant to understand and recognize and see as tangibly around them, because God has got a purpose for us. He's got a race for us to run. And it's really important that we get hold of that, because otherwise we're going to find the life of faith slipping away from us. I remember one year doing this Marathon Sunday at New Life, and there was a guy there who came in from the crowd. We have all sorts of the general people who are watching the race coming into the church gardens and drinking the tea and coffee. And there was this one guy standing by the tea and coffee table with his cup. And he was probably in his late 40s, and he was standing watching the race run by. And as the runners went past, I caught sight of him, and I could see that actually tears were running down his face. He was just standing there on his own watching with tears running down his face. And to be honest, on that day, I didn't really feel like talking to anybody, but, you know, the Holy Spirit was nudging me and saying, you need to go and talk to that man. There's something going on in him. So I went over and I said, are you okay? What's going on? And he just looked at me and he just said, oh, I'm sorry. He said, it's just so overwhelming watching this race. He said, because 8 years ago, I ran that marathon. I was in that race, he said, and it's just taking me back to a time 8 years ago where my life had a sense of purpose and direction, and I felt like I had something I was living for and something I was going for. And then he said, in the intervening 8 years, my life has fallen apart. And then he just really started to break down and weep. And I said, well, look, why don't you come inside? And he came into the building and he started to share his story with me. And he told me that he'd just been released from prison just a week before, that he had been in because he had beat his wife really badly, very badly. He'd found her. She'd been with another man. He got angry. He lost his temper. He'd been drinking and he really hurt her. And he'd been sent to prison for a few years. And that had all happened, and he'd literally just been released the week before. And he just, as he was telling me the story, he just said, you know, I had all these hopes and dreams when I was running in that race 8 years ago. And I was one of those people that all the people on the side of the road, they were cheering me on, and they were shouting my name because they could see it written on my t-shirt, and they were calling for me. And I felt like I was somebody, and I felt like I had good things going on for me. And he said, and then I just threw it all away. I just lost it. And then he turned to me and he said, is there hope for somebody like me? Can God forgive somebody like me? He'd already been, I think the gospel had been shared with him actually while he was in prison. He talked about it and he said that he couldn't make a response because he just felt that what he'd done was too terrible, too bad, that he could never be worthy to be called a Christian, to be called a follower of Jesus. And he said to me, could I be forgiven? And I said to him, well, you know, I think the message of the gospel is no message at all, is it, if you can't be forgiven? That's what Jesus died for. That's what he paid for on the cross. And he listened, and it was an amazing moment. Actually, he gave his life to the Lord that day, and he's going on with God since. We followed him up. He moved away from London, but he was going to a church, an Ichthus congregation, for a while, and he was going on with the Lord really well. His life turned around again. But I was thinking about the way that race, that marathon for that guy, Jim, was like a metaphor for his life, you know, that sense of direction and purpose and something to go for and something to train for and something to live for. And for him, you know, he recognized that he'd lost that because of all the stuff that had happened since then. But we are meant to live, aren't we, as the people of God, with that constant sense of purpose and direction and something to run for in mind, because Jesus has got a beautiful purpose for us. But we kind of lose it, don't we? We don't always live in that atmosphere. We don't always live in the atmosphere of being cheered on in an amazing race. And yeah, it's really hard work, but everybody's cheering for me so I can keep going and I can keep doing it. We don't always live with that consciousness. And generally the reason is because some point or another, in some way or another, we've taken our eyes off Jesus. And we've lost sight of him as the goal and the focus and the reason that we're running, the reason that we're living the life of faith. There's a brilliant old song that we used to sing when I was a kid here in Ichthus and probably lots of other places. And it goes, I want to serve the purpose of God in my generation. I want to serve the purpose of God while I am alive. I want to give my life for something that will last forever. Oh, I delight to do your will. I want to build with silver and gold in my generation. I want to build with silver and gold while I am alive. I want to give my life for something that will last forever. I delight to do your will. I want to see the Lord come again in my generation. I want to see the Lord come again while I am alive. I want to give my life for something that will last forever. I delight to do your will. I think the words of that song are incredibly powerful, and they capture the atmosphere, the charge, the energy with which Jesus calls us to live the life of faith with him. That we're running because we want to see in our generation, in our lifetime, the fullness of that beautiful promise that all those heroes of old were waiting for. It's an awesome, inspirational cause that we live for. It's not about a bunch of slightly religious people or a bunch of slightly holier-than-thou people or a bunch of people who are slightly sickly sweeter than the next person. That is such a reduction of what it is that Jesus is calling us to live for. He says, I want you to live for me. I want you to live the life of faith in me because there's a kingdom that I want to bring in that is beautiful, that is awesome, where there is righteousness and peace and joy, and there is no more sickness and no more death and no more suffering and no more war and no more sorrow and no more broken relationships and no more pain being inflicted upon one another, where there's a beautiful society that live together in love, in the flow of love that comes from heaven. And that vision of that kingdom that Jesus is the king of and that he is bringing into our earthly experience, if we'll run it with him, that vision is something worth living for with every ounce of energy in our bodies, isn't it? Isn't it something that the world desperately needs? Isn't it something that the world is crying out for? And we've got political conversations going on left, right and center trying to solve the deep-rooted problems of the world. And they will never manage it. They do their best, but they will never, ever manage it, because we need something more powerful, deeper, that goes deeper than just conversations or democracy. We need something that goes deeper than that, that gets to the root of the problem in the human heart. And the truth is that Jesus has come with that solution. He's come with the answers for my friend Jim, who came out of prison and said, can I be forgiven? He's got an answer for that man, and he gave it to him, and his life was changed and turned around, and he started to live a different way, and he started to run on a different race course, and he started to go in a different direction, because there really is a kingdom that is like that, that is full of beauty and truth and grace place and that causes humanity to be all that it was intended to be in the first place when God created it. There really is a kingdom like that, but you and I, we've got to run a race really hard to see it brought in. That's our job. Because when Jesus went up to be with the Father, he left us with a task. And he said, we've got to get out into all the world with the gospel. We've got to preach the good news to the ends of the earth. This good news of the kingdom will be preached in all the world, and then the end shall come. He left us with this job, and the running of the race and the training of our lives and the focus of our energy and the discipline of our walk of faith is all about getting that job done so that Jesus can come in and bring in the fullness of that beautiful kingdom. We get tastes of it and experiences of it all over the place, but he wants to bring it in its fullness so that all those heroes of old will stand up with a great, mighty, rousing cheer and say, hooray, we've done it, all that we ran for in the past. It's been worth it. Here it is, the new heavens and the new earth where Jesus is king and his kingdom is experienced by his people and a beautiful new society is rising up. That's what God has in his mind, and that's what he's calling us to run for, and that's the energy and the purpose behind every Christian life if we will let it be. But we won't run that way if we lose sight of Jesus. We've got to fix our eyes on him. And the writer says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of the faith. And I think when we stop being motivated for our Christian life, when we stop being motivated for the walk of faith, it's generally because we've lost sight of Jesus and other things have become the focus. And more often than not, the other things that have become the focus are to do with really just sort of how I'm feeling, aren't they? And perhaps our own expectations of ourselves. And we start to shift into a whole different sort of mentality and motivation for the Christian life, which was never intended for it. I was thinking about this because when I was at university many years ago, rowing was quite a big thing where I was. And I was quite into rowing. I was good at it, actually. And our college that I rowed with, we were a particularly good boat. And It's a whole kind of world of rowing, so I won't bore you with the details of how things work. But basically, our college boat that I rowed in, we were the top of the river, that's what they call it. We were as good as you can get, we were better than all the other crews. And so we had to do a lot of training, as you can imagine. And I didn't really like training. I really liked rowing, but I tell you what I don't like is land training. I hate running, and I especially hate the kind of land training that our crew leader, the stroke of the boat, made us do, which was she would always make us run bridge runs, as they were called. We had to run this kind of few miles to a horrible railway bridge. Basically then we had an hour solid of just running up and down the steps. Completely sorry. So as soon as you get to the bottom, you right. I know Paul is loving this, isn't he, there over there? Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I hated it. So, but I would do it, you know, because we were a good boat and I wanted us to, you know, stay good. And I would do these training. But after a while, you know, you get to the point where you've done a few bridge runs and the next one's coming up. And, you know, I went to bed the night before. You have to get up really early to do it. And before lectures, and I was feeling pretty tired, and I was feeling, you know, a tiny bit ill. So I thought, you know, I'm feeling a tiny bit ill today, so I'll just text everyone and say, oh, sorry, I'm ill. I can't make it tomorrow morning. Because in your mind, you start to think to yourself, well, you know, what difference does one more bridge run really make? You know, are we seriously saying that one more bridge run up and down those stairs, is that actually going to make the difference as to whether we remain head of the river or whether we don't and whether another crew beats us? Well, the answer to that is who can tell? Probably not. Maybe, possibly. Who can tell? You can't make that calculation, can you? And so you can say to yourself, well, it won't make any difference. So, you know, I text them as though, oh, I'm feeling ill. Sorry, I can't make it today. Anyway, my crew leader was obviously quite wise to me. And she, the next day, after, like later on in the day, she got in touch with me and she said, okay, so you missed the bridge run, the rest of us did it, so I'll meet you tomorrow morning then, now you're feeling better, and we'll do it, just you and me, we'll do it together. I was like, oh gosh, yes, okay, so then we have to do it anyway. Anyway, she took me down there, it was amazing really, she was a very motivated person, and she like did two in a row. So we went and we started to do our bridge run. And I remember she would run alongside me, and as we were running, she would say, she obviously had a lot more breath than I did, and she would be shouting things, and she'd be like, imagine that trophy when we get head of the river again this year, imagine that trophy, visualize it in your mind, remember how good it feels to be the winner, we're the best boat, remember how good that feels, remember what it's like. And I know that people are different personalities, okay, and some of you are sat here thinking, this would not motivate me in the slightest, but something about her saying those things, it made a difference, okay? It made it possible for me to run up and down that hideous, horrible railway bridge, because genuinely, as she was saying it, in my mind, I was visualising that moment when you pull that last stroke and you go zooming across that line, and it's a good feeling. It's like, yes, we did it, we won. It's amazing. And the party afterwards, and they burn a boat and you jump over it. It's all very weird. And all sorts of crazy things that happen. And she's like putting these things in my mind. And as I was thinking about it, I was like, yeah, I can do this. And I kept running and I kept running. It's still miserable. Don't get me wrong. It's still painful, miserable, horrible. You feel like death afterwards. But somehow that motivation got me through it. Thinking about that end point. Thinking about what it was all for. What we were doing it for. And the thing is, I think it's a bit like that when the writer to the Hebrews is saying, fix your eyes on Jesus. He's saying, look at the king and the beautiful kingdom that he is bringing. Look at that stuff and keep it in your mind, because that is going to make you run a better race. Because a Christian life where we don't have that as the motivation, where we're just kind of thinking about what we ought to be doing day by day, that kind of Christian life is a whole different mentality, and it will lead you to say, well, what difference does one more bridge run make? Not a lot. I've done a few. So today's bridge run isn't going to make the difference, is it, between winning and losing? It's not going to. What? I'll just stay in bed this morning and it won't make a scrap of difference to anything. Do you see the shift in mentality that happens? Yeah, you're still kind of running the race. You're still doing the training, but the whole mentality is different. But when you've got that end goal in sight, somehow you've got energy and adrenaline to run a better race, to do well for Jesus, to accomplish something for the Lord. And he wants our life of faith to look something like that, because we run harder when we look at Jesus. And it's a generation that runs hard after Jesus, that runs a good race for him, that takes care with our spiritual lives, that thinks about what it means to follow Jesus and puts that first, that gets into his word and tries to understand it even when it's tough, that takes time every day to pray and seek the Lord and go deeper in prayer than we did before, that decides that even though I don't feel like seeking the Lord for a prophetic word this morning or whatever it might be, you know, that decides, well, you know what, maybe the Lord wants to speak, so perhaps I will. I'll push those other things out of my mind. I won't sit here passively. I'll listen. I'll tune in. I'll ask the Lord, do you want to use me, Lord? Who uses our gifts in those kinds of moments when we don't really have to. When we're looking around and in the other mentality, we'd think, well, someone else will probably say something nice. That's fine. I don't need to. You know, but it's the person who's got that vision all the time in their mind of Jesus and what he's done and what he wants to do and what he wants to bring in. When we've got that in our minds, well, it gives you the energy to listen a bit harder, to use your gifts a bit better, to welcome that person that actually you'd rather not welcome, to go out and do things that are outside of your comfort zone, to be the person who invites some people around for dinner because you know it's going to bless them, to be the person person that listens to that person's story, even though you're really tired or you've got something else that you should be doing. To be the person that visits that one in hospital, even though you're really busy and you can't really fit it in, but you're going to do it. It gives you the energy to run a better race for Jesus when in our minds we're filled with the vision of what it is that he's doing and what it is that he's seeking to do through us. We run a better race that way. Fix your eyes again on Jesus, on who he is. He's the author and the finisher. That word author literally kind of could be translated better. Top competitor. Okay? It's got the same word in it as the word for the race that is marked out before us, but with kind of the word top or best on the beginning. It's the one who's run that race the very, very best. Jesus is the author of faith because he is the one who has lived the best life of faith that has ever been lived. He's done it in perfection. He's done it to the full. He said, everything that the Father is doing, that's what I'm doing. I only do the things that I see the Father doing. I'm listening to him all the time. I'm working his works all the time. That was the life of faith Jesus lived. It was amazing. And he is therefore the author of our faith. He is the top competitor. He is the standard to which we want to start running. You know, people who want to do a good marathon pace themselves against the professionals and the really good people. They start to think, well, I'm going to go for that kind of speed. You don't pace yourself against someone who's the same as you or a bit worse. That will mean you run a worse race. We want to be people who look at Jesus and look at his life of faith and the way he lived it and say, I'm going to go for that. It was perfect. It was the best. No one else is going to top that one, but I'm going to go for that. You're going to run a better race if you do that. He's the author of our faith. And then when you fail, and when you fall short of that standard, because of course you will, because who lives the life of faith as perfectly as Jesus? None of us do. But when you fall short of it, well, that's when he's the finisher. He's the perfecter. He's the one who makes up for all your failings, who makes up for all the mistakes, who makes up for all the stumblings, so that we don't come with the mentality of, oh, well, I'll never run it like Jesus, so I'll just do a kind of my own little shuffle along in this race. No, we run it as though we can run it like Jesus, and then we find we can, because he's the finisher, he's the author, he's the standard, he's the benchmark, and he's the finisher. He's the one who enters into your life at the very point when you're failing in your faith, when the very point when you've got nothing left to give, at the very point when you feel like chucking it all in and doing something like the other people around you in your life are doing. God says, no, that's the point when I'm the finisher. I'll come, I'll make up for all those mistakes and the lack and the feeling of I can't quite do it and I can't make it, Lord. That's where I enter in. I'm the author and the finisher of your faith. You can run a good race if you keep your eyes fixed on him, the author and the perfecter of our faith. You know, we run a better race when we despise the shame. That's what it says about Jesus. We run a better race in our Christian life when we despise the shame. I think it's interesting that it doesn't say that Jesus despised the pain. That's maybe what we think he would have to turn his mind away from. You know, not think about the pain. That's how I was with the bridge run. Didn't want to think about the pain. But Jesus says, actually, it's the shame. He despised the shame. What does that mean? I think it's the way that other people judge the life of faith. Because they won't think much of it. You see, if you run a really hard race for Jesus, if you go for him with every ounce of what you've got in your being, your life will look very different from those around. And they won't necessarily respect it, think much of it, applaud it, not necessarily. Very often they'll think you've wasted it, or you've poured it out for something a bit embarrassing, a bit pointless, a bit silly. I remember going back to my old school After I'd graduated, and I'd started working for a tiny little Christian schools work project, as it was then, just three of us, called XLP. Today it's a nice big charity, really well known, not in those days, little tin pot effort, and in our ripped jeans and trainers. We went into schools telling young people about Jesus, and I went back into my old school, and I met my old French teacher. And she really liked me when I was at school. She gave me the French prize, even though the truth is I didn't really deserve it. The truth is there were other people much better at French than I was. But she liked me. She sort of saw something in me, I think, and she wanted to encourage it. And she thought I could go places. And I remember when I was talking to her about what I was doing now, and I was working for this charity, and I was working voluntarily at the time, and all I was doing was going around into usually failing secondary schools around London and doing lunch clubs with the kids. And she was listening, and she said, "And that's what you're doing with that amazing education you've got, is it?" That's what she said. But I still remember the feeling, because actually suddenly in that moment I felt ashamed. So I thought, I'm really not doing anything very worthwhile with my life, am I? And she had these great expectations. But you see, the life of faith is like that sometimes. We'll choose things that other people don't get, and they'll despise it. But we have to despise that feeling that comes in, that shame, that sort of, "Oh, I want my life to look very glorious and worthwhile. I want it to look like the person down the road who seems to have got it all sorted and isn't following Jesus." We have to turn away from that and decide, "I'm going to run this race anyway with everything I've got. Because even if it doesn't look like much to anyone else, Jesus can do something with that and bring in more of that beautiful kingdom. Because that's the vision that's glowing in my mind." I want to finish with these thoughts. Literally just a challenge, really, to us. Because the writer goes on to talk about encumbrances, entanglements, and endurance. I just want to finish really by issuing the same sort of challenge. I guess he's talking about that because he's saying a good race, running a good race for Jesus, is going to have something to do with encumbrances, getting rid of them, entanglements, avoiding them, and endurance, doing it. And I guess that's the get in shape, get moving, and don't stop that we started with. The encumbrances, that word in the Greek, it's like a kind of bulk, and it was often applied in the Olympic context to getting rid of your excess body fat and the excess weight that stopped you from being streamlined. You know, it's the stuff that we can just streamline in our lives, the stuff that weighs us down and makes us plod. I guess it's like the spiritual disciplines that Jesus wants for us. It's, as we said, it's deciding to get up a few minutes earlier so we can be prayerful people. It's deciding to take a few minutes and turn the TV off and look into God's word because we want to be full of God's word and truth. It's those disciplines where we just trim the bulk and we get in shape. And some of us, we're not leading those kind of disciplined lives. It's not discipline for its own sake. It's not discipline so that I can feel fitter than the next person and some kind of pharisaical, self-righteous self-satisfaction at how fit and healthy I am. We can get into that mindset, can't we? It's not about that. Spiritually speaking, it's about saying, "I want to run a really good race. Because if I run a really good race, then maybe this can be the generation that sees that beautiful kingdom come. If we all run a really good race, maybe we can be. So I want to be disciplined. I want to be ready. I want to be in tune with what God has got for me to do. Getting rid of the encumbrances. I want to avoid entanglements." The sin that so easily entangles, it says. It's a complicated word in the Greek, but it really seems to have something to do with something external that you get caught up in, basically. Something out there that you get caught up in, a distraction, an entanglement that draws you away from the course, running hard after Jesus, that draws you into something else. For many of us, that is just an area of sin. And we know, perhaps a bit like Vicky's picture again, we know that there are things that continually draw us aside from that race with God, that continually bring us to a halt when we should be running. And Jesus says to us this morning, let's get moving. If we've stopped in our life of faith and we're caught up with something else, we're entangled in something else, let's turn away from it, turn back, fix our eyes on him. He's got the answers for whatever situation you're in, whatever sin you feel caught in. He can forgive, he can free you, he can get you moving again. Let's just take the opportunity this morning to turn away from the entanglements. And then we endure. We keep going. We don't stop. We run hard after Jesus. I love the fact that last time we did church on the street, Roger and Faith came out with us. They're giving away leaflets. They're singing songs about Jesus. They're talking to people. You know, they could say they've done their stint, couldn't they? Couldn't they say, I've done enough churches on the street, it's a bit cold today, I'll stay home. They don't do that because they're running hard after Jesus the whole way. And they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop until they run into glory. And I want to be that person. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to say, I did my stint of that. Oh yeah, I used to be really enthusiastic Christian and now I've toned it down a bit. You know, let's not be that. Don't stop. Run hard. Get in shape, get moving, don't stop. Let's pray.